Welcome back to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. With me in the studio is Dr. Les Olala, Chancellor at Northland International University and co-host of the broadcast. And Doc, we are in the middle of our Christmas series, and we're calling our series this year The Christ of Christmas. We began in our first broadcast reflecting on Christmas traditions that take us back to the roots of our family or to the roots of things. And that kind of led naturally into a discussion in terms of what are the roots of Christmas. And you took us all the way back to Matthew chapter 2 and Luke chapter 2 as well. And we looked at the coming of Christ at a perfect time that God had been orchestrated for really all of history. We read in Galatians that Christ came in the fullness of time. He was made of a woman and he was made under the law. And when he came those many centuries ago, God had been working and orchestrating out a plan, but we took a look at what was going on in the world of that day. And we observed there were three groups, and we talked about Herod, the political group that basically ignored and was just absolutely abhorrent of the Lord, and they wanted to remove him because of the threat that he was to them. And then you talked to us a little bit about a group of priests who knew everything there was to know about the coming of Messiah. In fact, when Herod asked them, they knew exactly what passage to point to and where he was going to be born, but they were indifferent to it. They pretty much went their own way, and then, of course, we zeroed in on the Magi that had come from the East, and these are people who were deeply interested enough to take a journey that may have taken as much as 18 months to make at great personal expense, pursuing this star that led them to Bethlehem. And there they came and adored him. And we ended the broadcast by observing that wise men still do that today. All three of those groups are with us still. There are those that are indifferent to Christ and those that are certainly wanting to ignore his rule and reject his right to rule over us. And yet, even in the midst of all of that, there are still those that God is drawing and who are interested in coming to worship Christ. And that leads us then to maybe a little bit of a closer examination at these wise men, because the text spends a lot of time talking about what they brought to the manger when they came, or what they brought to the Lord, because actually, you know, we think maybe enough time had passed where the Lord was no longer in a manger. He may have been dwelling in a house, but they certainly came and they brought gifts with them. And you had brought a very interesting thought to bear about these wise men and their relationship to Daniel the prophet.
Well, when you look back at Daniel, he was the greatest of all magi. And he had always had a God reference when questions came up. He was noted as a very wise man.
Even in his day.
When he would have a request to answer a question, he said, I have to talk to my God about this. He would get the mind of God, and then he would communicate the mind of God to these people. And he had such an impact, a lasting impact, that I think his prophecies carried over to this generation. I think that was handed down from generation to generation. And when you look in Daniel chapter 9, and verse 25 and following, there's a very detailed description of when the Messiah would come.
I mean, right down to the year.
Right down to the year. And I think these magi then were looking with this knowledge, made that journey. Why else would they? I mean, magi wouldn't be sitting around and say, well, nobody's asked us any questions today. Let's go let's go and take a trip to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
No, it was planned. It was a long journey. The timing had to be right. Yeah. The placement had to be right, but it had to be based on knowledge.
What do you think they thought when they came into Jerusalem and nobody was looking for this? I mean, they had spotted the star. They had drawn the calculations. They had gone back and done the research from, you know, like you were saying, great-great-uncle, you know, Daniel and whoever, you know, back in those days. And they come to Jerusalem and nobody's even looking.
They had to be puzzled in my mind. I mean, how could, this is their Messiah. This is their God. It's their writings. There's got to be a buzz going on right now in that region. They get there and people are at the mall buying gifts for Christmas. And Jesus, who? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And very similar to the situation today.
Exactly.
But it didn't divert them. But they did ask, where is he that is born the King of the Jews? And so the Magi were those who were seeking and adoring.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the three groups. Now, the three gifts, what did they come? Read verse 7 through verse 12 of Matthew chapter 2. And we can put this into context as well, because after the groups that we saw Herod, we saw the chief priests, we saw the wise men. Now we see three gifts.
Well, in verse 7, Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of him diligently what time the star appeared. And in verse 8, he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search diligently for the young child, and when you have found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also." Boy, that was deceptive. And then in verse 9, when they heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. And they saw the star and rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold, and frankincense, and myrrh.
Okay. What is significant about the gifts?
Well, I think the gold and the frankincense and the myrrh are things that perhaps, well, we know about gold today, but frankincense and myrrh, I'm not sure are as familiar to us. But I think there's theological significance to each of those, don't you?
Well, I think it's all related to the character of the Christ child.
In other words, the gifts were reflective of who he was.
Of who he was.
Okay.
And the gold represented him as the mighty king, speaking of this one born as royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that was prophesied. In fact, it was acknowledged by Nebuchadnezzar when he had the three friends of Daniel thrown in, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, thrown into the furnace. And he looked in, he said, "Did not we throw three in? I see four, and the fourth is like unto..."
The Son of Man.
The Son of Man.
Which is a reference to God.
A reference
right.
to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see that early on, there was a knowledge. And finally, what was the acknowledgement in Nebuchadnezzar? All of the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He doeth everything according mm-hmm. to his will. None can stay his hand and say, "What doest thou?"
That was after a special ed course he had.
Yeah, that was after his education. He went through a very difficult postgraduate course. And he finally came to the conclusion, who is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords? Now, this gift of gold, remember the image in Daniel chapter 2, the head of gold, that's Babylon, that was Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah.
Silver of arms and brass belly and legs
of iron
and clay. But what comes and crushes this image?
It's a boulder.
It was a boulder, a stone cut out of the mountain without hands, in reference to, in my mind, the virgin birth of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Not the
mm-hmm.
work of man. This mm-hmm. was indeed the work of God. How could you get a stone cut out of a mountain? They were very familiar with cutting stones out of mountains with great labor, with great diligence. But this was done without hands. And what did that stone do?
It crushed
came
the
and
head.
Crushed the image. Now, here is the gift of gold, a true acknowledgement. Nebuchadnezzar is not that head of gold. Babylon is not that head of gold. The Medes and the Persians, silver. They were not the long-term mm-hmm. King of Kings mm-hmm. and Lord of Lords. Greece was not the long-term King of Kings. Rome was not the long-term King of Kings. The 10 leaders in the 10 toes were not the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. But the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords came and crushed this entire Gentile world mm-hmm. system mm-hmm. so that he would represent royalty. He indeed was King of Kings and Lord of Lords. This gift of gold was not just a little bit, "Oh, by the way, we have a little gold we'd like to give you." This was a very clear statement and
the
acknowledgement.
This is like tribute.
A tribute that he is indeed royalty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what threatened Herod.
And I hate to make this like trivial application, but what we do with our gold in relationship to that king speaks of how well we really believe his sovereignty.
Well, what an application that is. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also.
Mm-hmm.
How much do we really believe what we have in our treasure mm-hmm. is to be given for the ultimate good of reaching those who are lost?
It's a tribute to him who is our king. And boy, if we measure how much we really think he's king by how much tribute we bring, I mean, that's a pretty amazing and convicting idea.
Boy.
So we had gold here. What else did they bring?
Frankincense.
Now, what is frankincense?
Well, it was a part of the priestly work I think when these sacrifices are given up, it was like a sweet savor that came to the nostrils of God, accepting that sweet savor gift.
Sort of like incense that they would put in with the sacrifices?
Yeah, and Hebrews 4:15, we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. So this frankincense is speaking of him as a ministering priest in reference to his deity, not only royalty, he was deity. And we see that this priest who came is the one who understands as a sympathizing and empathizing Savior. We no longer go through an earthly priest. He is the one to whom we go to the Father in prayer. And so the frankincense spoke of the deity of Christ. And then there was myrrh. And what was myrrh in reference to?
Well, myrrh was a spice that I think was associated with the death of a person, of royalty or deity, that he would have been wrapped in terms of just the presentation and preparation of the body for burial.
So if gold spoke of royalty, frankincense spoke of his deity, what would myrrh speak of? His humanity. And Isaiah 53 very clearly presents this Christ, this Messiah, this one who was to be born. Isaiah 7:14 spoke of the virgin. Isaiah 9:6 spoke of him as the one who would be the ruler, the one who would be the king.
His goings forth would have been from of old.
From of old. And now we see this myrrh represented a martyred prophet speaking of his humanity. It was interesting. I was preaching at a church. I mentioned this. It was a Christmas message, and I mentioned myrrh. And a man who was a beekeeper came up to me, and he said, "Do you know what myrrh is?" And I said, "Well, I was thinking it was some kind of a spice or something." And he said, "I just came from a beekeeper convention." And he said, "What's in the inside of a beehive is myrrh. It keeps the purity of that." So I said, "I'm going to look into that." I never looked beyond that. But it was speaking of
the idea of protecting the purity.
Protecting the purity.
These gifts came after these men fell down and worshipped him.
Yes.
It came out of a heart that had already embraced who the Lord was.
Yeah.
And these gifts are a proclamation of that. And that's really what our gifts to God are. They are a proclamation and a representation of who we believe he is. And what a fitting way to end the broadcast as we talk about the gifts that are fit for a king. Well, until the next time that we're together, may the Lord bless you.